my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. Call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. I know when that hotline bling, that can only mean one thing. I know when that hotline bling, that can only mean one thing.
Welcome back to Armchair HQ. So we took a little bit of a hiatus from the 10th episode Spooktacular just because we wanted to catch our breath after 10 straight weeks of recording. So
keep in mind we are college students. Yeah. Like we're very busy. Yeah. And this takes like a while for us to
takes a bunch of time to prep and then a bunch of time to edit. So we hope you guys don't mind. We wanted to thank everybody again for the great questions we got for the 10th episode. They kept the episode moving really, really smoothly, probably for arguably one of our best.
Definitely my favorite one to do.
Definitely.
Although I have a soft spot for roasting Mike Tannier.
That's true.
But yeah, last week was a lot of fun. So thanks again for the questions, guys. Yeah,
made everything really, really fun, made everything run really smoothly. So we'll jump right into... We'll go in a little bit of a different order for this episode, but we'll jump right in to some college football talk. The new rankings for college football playoff won't come out until tomorrow, but we can still talk about a lot that happened since we recorded 2 weeks ago. Georgia lost to Auburn, really got beat down by Auburn.
Yep.
Notre Dame unfortunately lost, Rob.
Rip.
Wisconsin beat Michigan on Saturday. And Oklahoma beat TCU 2 weeks ago at home. So at least as of this recording, it probably shouldn't change too much tomorrow.
I don't think it'll.
But the top six is Alabama, Clemson, Miami, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Auburn. And all six of those teams won on Saturday.
Yep.
So nothing should really change. The only thing that might change is maybe Oklahoma moves up one spot.
Yeah.
Maybe to... over Clemson or...
Switches with Miami.
Yeah. But the top six shouldn't change. And if it does, we'll have something really big to talk about.
Yeah.
Come next week. But...
Another dark horse to point out is Ohio State.
Yeah, because they're coming in hot right now.
Yeah, and you can also never count out Ohio State bias that we've seen in the past.
True.
It might have even been last year. Ohio State made it in with two losses. They did. Yeah, they made it with two losses last year and promptly got shut out by Clemson.
When they won the national title, wasn't that?
There was controversy that year also.
That was the year where they like almost lost to Michigan. That was that close fourth down play, right?
Yeah. Worked out for them that year. Last year, though. Everyone was like, all right, I don't think they belong.
They shouldn't have been in, and then they got destroyed.
And everyone was like, yeah, they didn't belong. Like, should have given it to, I don't even remember who was five, maybe TCU or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, definitely, there's pretty much only seven players left. Notre Dame is number eight, but they're out of it with no conference. They need a lot of chaos. The Pac-12 is out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of Auburn or Alabama is going to lose. They play each other this week.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
Whoever, one of those teams is going to be in.
But I guess potentially Georgia.
That's assuming. Oh yeah, we forgot about Georgia. Yeah. Georgia cannot lose again, and they would need to really comfortably beat whoever they play. Actually, I don't even know if they need to be comfortable because they're going to play Auburn or Alabama.
Yeah, they'll have a chance to win the SEC.
They'll have a chance to beat a good team because Auburn and Alabama are.
Yeah.
Very good teams. Yeah. As we've seen now with Georgia would be able to redeem themselves if they played Auburn again.
Yeah.
And obviously play a good team in Alabama if the other were to happen. So aside from the college football playoffs though, we have three coaching vacancies that are gonna be filled soon with Florida, Nebraska, and UCLA now, with Jim Mora being fired today. But the one that...
Tennessee also. Unless you believe Brady Hoke is going to step in there, which I don't.
Absolutely do not.
Yeah.
So we don't really know. We know it's Scott Frost, the Central Florida coach, is rumored to be the favorite for Nebraska.
He's a former quarterback in Nebraska. Mm-hmm.
But nothing really right now definite for Tennessee. Nothing definite for UCLA. But the rumors coming out of Florida are that Chip Kelly is going to be the next head coach. And while those aren't confirmed, we have underground sources that are 90 to 99% positive that that's pretty much a done deal. So we figured we'd be the ones to deliver some breaking news for you.
Yeah. I like the move for Florida if they go through with it.
I do too. They've just been so boring. They've just been so boring for like four or five years. Like,
since Tebow graduated pretty much.
Like they haven't
since Urban Meyer left.
They haven't had a good quarterback. Their defense has been like good but not great.
They had like that 1 year where they had, you know, Vernon Hargraves and Jerron Reed and I don't even know who else. There was a linebacker too. Davis.
That was like Quincy Wilson.
Yeah. And they've been stout, but they can't score. The Florida specialty is winning like 17-13 or something.
Yeah. And
then getting blown up by Alabama in the SEC.
And it's because they beat up on the lower level SEC schools.
Yeah.
And they get destroyed when they play somebody legitimate.
Yeah.
So you know Chip Kelly has a system and it's gonna work in college.
Yeah, he's gonna put up some points.
Yeah.
And he's gonna recruit his guys. And Florida
With Florida, he'll actually be able to play. He'll be able to play some defense. It looks like if he just can continue to bring in those quality players. Because even if the defense takes a step back, and instead of being like a top 10 defense, it's like a top 30 or even top 40 defense. If they score 60 points, if they can hold a team to 30, they're gonna win with Chip Kelly.
It'll be a process, though. It'll be 2 years before there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, considering they have no offensive, you know, they don't have his players yet. They don't have his system in place.
Yeah, it will be expedited because recruiting in Florida
is nice.
And recruiting in Texas is
pretty sweet.
It's awesome for those schools because they just churn out 5-star blue chip recruits like it's nothing. Mm-hmm. And obviously recruits want to stay close to home, so that's why you get schools like Florida State and Florida and Miami and Texas, which are historically great because they're, you know, right in the backyard of some of these stars coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Alabama also.
Just practically like as close to pro ready athletes.
Yeah.
In the country.
Yeah.
That are gonna either are super raw and become solid players by the time they're seniors in college, or who all leave early and get drafted in the first round. So I actually wrote an article last year looking at the states that produce the most NFL talent. And it was like Georgia was number one.
Really?
But then it was, you know, Louisiana, Texas, Florida, California.
Yep.
All the ones you'd expect.
Yeah.
But yeah, Georgia was number one, but it was like, they were number one by like a very narrow margin with all the typical schools coming in right behind them.
Pennsylvania is weirdly...
Pennsylvania also,
they're also very good, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I was reading a newspaper article about it. Like, Eastern Pennsylvania is where like Dan Marino,
mm-hmm.
Jim Kelly, Joe Montana, like name a Hall of Fame quarterback.
They're probably from...
They're from Eastern Pennsylvania. It's so weird, with the exception of John Elway.
Yeah.
Little... John Elway is the weenie that claimed he couldn't play in the cold.
Yeah, and then he went
couldn't play Denver. In the cold in Baltimore, and then got drafted by Denver.
And he was calling, and then he calls his team soft.
Yeah, I saw a tweet today. It was like quarterbacks drafted by the Colorado Rockies, the baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
They've drafted Russell Wilson.
Did they draft
Michael Vick? No.
Oh.
The Yankees drafted Elway.
Oh right. Yeah.
Yeah, so they drafted like Russell Wilson, Michael Vick, Todd Helton, who obviously didn't stay as a quarterback, was a Hall of Fame baseball player. And then it said quarterbacks drafted by John Elway. It was like Brock Osweiler, Trevor Siemian, Chad Kelly. Like nobody good.
Oof.
Paxton Lynch. Yeah, so it's like,
I mean,
this baseball team has a better lineup of quarterbacks than John Elway.
I mean, he still has a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Still has a Super Bowl ring as a player and an executive.
That's
so
fair. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Once Peyton's left, he's
got to pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Shall we move on to the important stats segment?
Ooh, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Let me pull up my important stats.
I'll go first.
Okay.
So, my first important stat, something that I got some flack for.
Oh, yeah.
Online. I'll tell you after. It was 0.3. So that was Nathan Peterman's total QBR, which is tied for the worst game of all time with Peyton Manning. So I tweeted this out yesterday, and I'm not exactly sure why, but this random dude, like, with a picture, his profile picture was the grandpa from Everybody Loves Raymond, calls me out and goes, oh, look, a moron. And I was like, dude, like, what I said was factually correct. Like, you can look it up. Nathan Peterman's QBR was tied for the worst of all time with Peyton Manning.
It was so surreal.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, well, I'm not holding back on this guy.
Yeah.
So Judd Dimmick and
I were
busting his balls online.
I ended up going through his account, and I was like, because Rob texted me, I was like, what is going on? Yeah, who is this guy?
Whose grandpa is this?
And so I scrolled through it, and I was like, well, he's just an angry old man who, like, goes after female sports writers and calls them dumb humps, whatever that is. And then 5 minutes later, calls Rob a dumb hump.
Yeah, he called him an uneducated hump.
Uneducated hump, excuse me.
Which is fair. I only go to the University of Buffalo.
Yeah.
No, that was a joke. It's a good school.
You go to a very good school.
Yeah, but I called him senile and all this stuff. Well, because at the end of the tweet, I said, pretty good company, if you ask me. Like, obviously, as a joke.
Yeah.
And so he gets all mad at me. So I said, oh, did the dementia take away your ability to detect sarcasm?
And then you see he's leaving, and you're delighted.
Yeah, he's like, all right, I'm out of here. And I was like, don't let the door hit you on the way out. You'll break your hip and have to call life alert. And he's like, you're dumber than dirt. I was like, I just got roasted.
And then Joe is just like, get off the stage.
Yeah, Joe Dinning. Threw his hat in the ring. He got called an ignorant asshole.
That's true. It's very...
not wrong, but rude.
The first factual argument. That
yeah, there you go.
The man made, but...
combat facts with facts.
Yeah. All right. My first stat is zero.
Oh, boy.
I love throwing out zero.
Yeah, you do.
The Saints, before their game on Sunday, had in their entire franchise history... the Saints had never won a game when trailing by 14 or more in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
They were 0-233-1.
Wow.
And they finally got one in the win column when they came back and beat the Redskins.
That is appalling.
Yeah. Just goes to show how abysmal the franchise was before Sean Payton and Drew Brees came around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Archie Manning never did it. Like, nobody ever...
Archie Manning never played on good teams.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
I saw that and just could not believe it.
Yeah, that's almost... that, like, defies logic.
They'd won a couple of games where they'd been down, like, 13 and 7.
Yeah.
But, you know, 14 is not that different than 13.
Especially,
you know?
I feel like Breeze, of all people, should have done that earlier. Like,
yeah.
If anybody can air it out and...
to be
rack
fair...
rack up some late touchdowns to Drew Breeze.
To be fair, more often than not, they're probably ahead in the fourth
that's
quarter.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that was that one. I just thought that was like...
yeah, that is...
my jaw dropped when I saw that.
Mind-boggling. All right, my second stat, something that we talked about a couple days ago, actually, is 34. What? My second stat is 34.
Okay.
It took Wayne Gretzky only 34 games to score 50 goals. I forgot which year it was. I did not write it down. In probably the 80s. In that same 34-game stretch, he also had 104 points and was plus 47. So I did the math a couple of days ago. It was like, if he had scored 104 points in 34 games, averaged out over a 82-game season, he would have scored like 260 points or something ridiculous.
Yeah, we had a really good discussion about that. Just the MVP award in hockey in general.
Yeah.
And so I have it pulled up right here. So the same thing I was looking at the other day. So originally players, the NHL only play like 40, like 20 to 40 games, at least up until like the 50s or so.
Yeah.
When with Gordie Howe. So nobody, like people who won the MVP were scoring like 50 points in 30 games, which is like, everyone was like, whoa, like that's pretty crazy. Good, yeah. Like in the 30s, like that was pretty solid. And then in 1944, somebody finally broke like 80 points, and that was a big deal. That was Elmer Locke. That was in 1944. Then we get into the 50s, and then Gordie Howe comes along, and if, you know, even if you're not even the most casual hockey fan knows who Gordie Howe is.
He's Mr. Hockey, yeah.
So he scored 86 points in 1951, he scored 95 points in 1952, and that was a huge deal. And then nobody really touched anything until the 60s, so 10 years later, Bernie Jeffrian scored 95 points. And then Bobby Hull in 1965, 97, somebody the next year, 97. So nobody's really doing, like, nobody's even getting into triple digits. Then we get in 1968, and Phil Esposito scores 126, and then Bobby Orr, a big,
yep,
big time name.
Three in a row.
139, 117, 104. Nobody has reached. Oh no, excuse me. Never mind. I was gonna say nobody had reached 50 goals, but somebody did in 1963. Nobody had.
Rocket Richard. Rocket Richard reached it. He just must not have won MVP because he was the originator of 50 goals in 50 games.
Yeah,
never which mind. Gretzky also because. The reason I stumbled upon the stat was because when people say 50 goals in 50 games, mm-hmm. it's always the first 50 games of the season.
Yeah.
But I saw this on Reddit. It was like, why isn't it just like any 50-game stretch?
Mm-hmm.
So Gretzky also has the record. It only took him 39 games to start the season to reach 50 goals.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
I just wanted to go through this because just to give everybody a reference. So finally, in 1968, somebody won the MVP with triple digit in points. It is 126.
Yeah.
And so then that started a streak of players getting triple digits. So that was 1968. And the highest point total somebody had in the time span before Gretzky came along was 145 points.
Yep.
And that was Phil Esposito in 1973. Then in 1979, a 19-year-old Wayne Gretzky comes along and scores 137 points. So at 19 years old, he scores 9 points less than Phil Esposito did when Phil Esposito was 31.
Yeah.
1979 starts the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the 8-year stretch where Gretzky wins the MVP award 8 years in a row. And I'm just going to read off the point totals Gretzky has in those 8 years. Starting in 1979 when he's 19, 137, 164, 212, 196, 205, 208, 215, 183. Then Mario Lemieux comes along and wins with 168. So Gretzky decides to win it again the next year at 168 as well.
Yeah. It's just insane, yeah.
Nobody touches.
Lemieux just, comes just close like another year. Anything. Lemieux 1 year came within like, he almost cracked 200.
Yeah.
And so, like, Gretzky has cracked 200 several times,
mm-hmm.
as you heard. Lemieux came close once, and then the next closest is, like, somebody in, like, the 140s or 150. Like, nobody else is even close.
Yeah.
I saw another post on Reddit where it was, like, if Wayne Gretzky's scoring totals were normalized for today's game based on standard deviations away from the mean, he would be averaging about 160 points a season.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I believe McDavid won it last year with
Evers.
Yeah, McDavid won MVP last year with 100 points.
Yeah.
And led the league in scoring. Kane won it the year before with 106 and led the league in scoring. So if Gretzky were to play the last 2 years, he would have led the league in scoring by 50, 60 points.
Which is amazing.
That's just how much better he was than everybody.
In the year that he had 212 points, he had 92 goals.
Yeah, that's nobody, the record.
Yeah, that's the record. The next closest MVP winner, at least, is Brett Hull in 1990 when he scored 86 goals. But then he had 131 points.
Yeah.
And Gretzky had 212.
Yeah. So and Hull that wasn't even his highest scoring season.
Yeah. Hull had 45 assists and Gretzky had 120. Yeah. Gretzky's highest was 215 points in 1985 because he had 163 assists.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. His highest plus minus. So that wasn't even, those 2 years weren't even when he had his highest plus minus. The year he had his highest plus minus is in 1984 when he scored 208 and his plus minus was plus 98.
That's absolutely ridiculous. My uncle, he was big into fantasy hockey when he was younger. So like when it was like first burgeoning. So yeah. In the 80s when Gretzky was good. And he said that his friends would, you couldn't draft Wayne Gretzky. You had to draft Wayne Gretzky's goals or Wayne Gretzky's assists.
Yeah.
And they'd always go one and two in whatever order. Because goals are way more than assists.
That's fair. Because if you
drafted Wayne Gretzky, you would just win.
Yeah.
It was just unfair.
I believe it. Yeah. All right. My second stat is 72. And that is the career win total now for Stanford coach David Shaw, which makes him the winningest coach in Stanford history. He passed Pop Warner.
Wow. I forgot the winningest coach
at Stanford.
I mean, Stanford hasn't really had a legacy
recent history with Harbaugh, honestly, and then Harbaugh had Luck and McCaffrey, and then older people.
Even the super famous game where the band runs out of the field,
yeah,
like both those teams were like 5-5
yeah,
or something, like Stanford and Cal were not good. It's just a legendary game because it's like hilarious how it ended. Yeah.
Stanford's always been like okay.
Yeah, they've always been like a good Pac-12 team.
Except when it was like really like back in the day and right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I just thought that was like a, huh, okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. Yeah. All right, my last stat is 1. So according to Fangraphs head scout Eric Longenhagen.
Nice.
Probably butchered that. Japanese phenom Shohei Ohtani would be the number one hitting prospect and tied for the number one pitching prospect in all of baseball.
Yeah.
Were he to sign. The MLB, set a deadline for 8 p.m. today on Monday.
And for Ohtani's
Japanese team to post him, but they delayed it. They pushed it
back.
They
delayed it? Oh.
Yeah.
I just Googled it. It says, yeah, MLBPA agrees to extension on posting agreement for Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
So do we know? Oh, 24-hour extension, so...
So tomorrow at 8 p.m.
Yeah. I find it hard to believe that they wouldn't...
They're...
Like, why I mean, would... They, I just don't understand why they wouldn't... Oh, okay, well, Rob Manfred said that he thinks it's going to happen.
Yeah, so, I'd be shocked if he didn't.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, I don't see why the MLB wouldn't want him to be in the league, and I don't see why his Japanese team, they're so honorable they wouldn't be like... No, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You can't go.
Yeah.
They're going to get $20 million. So. Yeah. That's pretty nice. But at least in our opinion, it's a foregone conclusion that the Yankees will probably get him.
Yeah.
Because they can't offer him the most money. The Rangers can offer him the most money. But the Yankees can still offer him considerably more than 2/3 of the rest of the league. They're in New York City. So what's interesting with Ohtani is that he's not going to be getting as big a contract as other Japanese baseball players that come over because he's so young, right?
Yeah, so the rule is, since he's declared as an international prospect, in order for a team to sign you, the majority of the money he'd be getting would be with a signing bonus.
Yeah.
But the contract, until he turns 25, he's obligated to only receive the league minimum contract, which is like... $500,000 or something, yeah. So he will be 23 the next season. So it'll be 3 years. I'm imagining the team will sign him to like a 3-year deal. So 3 years the league minimum with whatever team signs him, plus whatever signing bonus. Like you said, so that's where the money comes in. That's why the Rangers would have a lot of money to throw around at him. The Yankees obviously have a lot of money to throw around at him. So that they're basically competing for the first 3 years of his career.
Yeah.
After that, he hits the open market, most likely, not guaranteed, but most likely. and if he becomes big for sure.
And if he's the Japanese Babe Ruth, like they all say he is, then he'll make $300 million.
Yeah.
Or something easily. Absurd like that.
Yeah.
But that's why it's also interesting that it's probably going to be the Yankees, because if he's, you know, relying on his signing bonus, he's going to want to go to a place for a bigger city where he can get sponsorships.
Yep.
And also, he's probably going to want to go to a team that has success with international players and has international players on the team.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that the Yankees have the best Japanese player in the league currently in Tanaka.
Yep.
On the team. And they've had success with Matsui, who Ohtani really apparently has looked up to.
Yeah.
So it just, like, you know, put one and one and one and one and one and one together.
Yeah.
And it probably is going to happen.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Fun fact, Ohtani has said that he modeled his swing after Bryce Harper.
Hmm.
Which is pretty interesting, considering Bryce Harper is like a year older than him.
That's right. If you haven't already, we urge you to go and just watch YouTube videos of Ohtani, because there's one video where he hits the ball. In Japan, a lot of the stadiums are in domes, and there's this one home run that I consistently keep seeing when people talk about Ohtani just being an amazing, amazing player, is he hits a home run so high that it just, like, hits the roof of the stadium and kind of, like, disappears.
Yeah.
And they show, the camera cuts to his manager, and his manager is just, like, looking up at the sky with, like, his jaw just, like, on the ground, not, like, just with his eyes, like, unblinking, like, having, like, no idea how to process what he just saw.
He's, like, dumbfounded, yeah.
Because Ohtani's just that powerful and that good of a baseball player.
Yeah. This year, Ohtani was a little bit banged up, so his stats were good. But last year, as, like, a 21-year-old, he put up, like, he hit, like, 350 with, like, a bunch of home runs and pitched to, like, a sub-2 ERA and struck out, like, every other batter he faced or something like that. Like, his stats are just out of this world.
It's also similar to just, like, how sometimes, like, we see, I'm trying to think how to word this. So a lot of times we'll see, like, players who, like, in basketball, who instead of going to college, go and play in, like, Europe or something like that. Like, Ohtani's playing against, like, he's playing against professionals. He's not playing, like, it's not like they're getting, like, some guy out of college. He's going against, like, 30-year-olds and, like, late 20-year-olds in Japan.
Yeah.
And mind you, they're not as good as, you know, playing maybe in the minor leagues, some of the players, like, well, top prospects, he's playing against, he's a professional.
Yeah.
He's not a prospect, he's a professional.
They say, at least in the, because, well, I'm really big into baseball prospects, so they say in, like, the certain circles that I read frequently, that they call, like, Japanese leagues, they call it Quad A, because it's, like, a little bit better than Triple A,
but not as good as
the MLB.
But that makes sense. So, I mean, like,
yeah.
But, like, if you have the opportunity to sign somebody like this when he's, like, destroying...
Yeah. As a youngster,
Quad A. Yeah.
At both, like... I, at least, can't remember somebody who is this hyped up on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Both as a pitcher and a hitter.
Mm-hmm. It's like old-school football, almost.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah. I would like him to sign with an NL team only because I want to see...
A pitcher,
because
if he was even if he was just, like, you could honestly, it would be so interesting to do, like, see, like, a double switch, too, because, like, you could, I don't know, is he an outfielder? What position does he play?
He was an outfielder, yeah.
So he could be playing in, like, left or right field for the first, like, six innings, and then you could carry, like, one less reliever in your bullpen, and the manager could just be like, hey, like, Ohtani, like, just come pitch, like, two innings for us.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to have a pinch hitter for him.
Yeah.
You can just keep him in the same spot in the lineup.
It'd be so cool.
And he could pitch, like, two innings, and if he pitches, like, he throws, like, 99 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Or whatever he throws. Just be super interesting to watch. It would make a manager's life, like, if he actually pans out, it would make a manager's life that much easier.
Yeah.
And also just give the team more flexibility.
Yeah.
Which would be really cool.
Yeah. I was reading, like, a chat, and somebody asked... It was actually Eric Longenhagen, the guy that I said earlier. Somebody asked him, like, if you were the manager and you were an AL team and you signed Ohtani, would you have him DH four games and then pitch the fifth game? And he said, I would, but they're not going to.
Because they want to keep him fresh.
Yeah, it's just too risky.
Yeah.
Like, you're maximizing your not just your return on investment, but probably your ability to win, because he's probably a better hitter than at least somebody in your lineup.
But yeah,
he's in his they're, first they're not season in the majors. They're not going to risk his health like that.
Yeah. Anyways, we're excited about Ohtani.
Yeah.
In case you didn't pick up on it.
You don't earn Babe Ruth comparisons
just
and Bryce Harper comparisons for nothing. Yeah.
All right. My last stat is 400. Roy Williams, the coach of North Carolina, is the first coach in NCAA basketball history with 400 wins at two schools. He has 418 at Kansas, and now he's 400 at North Carolina.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I forget all the time that Roy Williams was the coach at Kansas.
I feel like he's super underrated.
Yeah.
Somehow.
He didn't win a national championship at Kansas, but he brought them... I know he brought them to one national championship. He could have brought them to a second. He might have brought them to two, but I think he lost both of them. But obviously, he's won a couple in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So he's pretty darn good. And they are playing right now. I can actually see what... I think this would be his 402nd win, or 400... I think this would be his 401st win, I believe. And ESPN is not loading, so...
I'll see if I can pull it up. They're playing Stanford right now.
We can set up the next part. So, moving on, we'll get into our Week 12 picks and preview. And that is brought to you by Comfy Boys. There's nothing we hate more than wearing uncomfortable clothes and most of the time still looking stupid. The Comfy Zone is not just a place to shop for comfy clothes that also look good. It was created to blur the line between comfy and swaggy. Whether you're a boy, girl, puppy, elephant, lamp, tree, hippo, join the Comfy Boys and help us spread the word of comfiness across the universe. Welcome to your Comfy Zone. Find them at comfy-boys.myshopify.com.
Since you were curious before jumping.
Yeah, I was curious.
North Carolina's up by 14 at the half.
Cool.
50-36. A lot of Kenny Williams, a lot of Joel Berry.
Nice.
As we'll be seeing a lot from them.
Yeah. All right. Week 12 picks. So we did it live last time. So
I'm doing mine live again.
You're doing live? Yeah, we can do it live right now. I looked at it, but I haven't written anything down, but I have just kind of
glanced. I haven't even looked at the schedule yet.
All right. First game, we got Thanksgiving games. We're picking Thanksgiving games. First Thanksgiving game on Thanksgiving Day, 12:30 p.m., we got the Vikings at the Lions. I will take the Vikings.
I really like the Lions because I really like Matt Stafford, but the Vikings beat the Rams, so I'm not going to pick against them.
Another thing we were talking about the other day, we were talking about Case Keenum, and I was just on the top of my head, I was thinking, like, we were just kind of saying how, like, Case Keenum is really just, like, defying the odds right now. Like, nobody was, like, thinking, like, oh, yeah, like, Case Keenum's going to be leading a team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And Rich Gannon was the quarterback for the Raiders in the late 90s and early 2000s. And Rich Gannon is famous mainly because the first, like, 10 years of his career, he was, like, a journeyman backup, like Keenum. Like, he really didn't, like, do anything in the NFL. And then all of a sudden he went to the Raiders when he was, like, 33 and became their starter and won the MVP and brought them to the Super Bowl. Lost the Super Bowl, but, like, won an MVP, went to, like, four straight Pro Bowls, and, like, out of nowhere was super, super good.
Yeah.
And so we looked up, like, we compared their two stats, and they're, like, shockingly similar.
Yeah.
Like, Keenum is literally just doing what Rich Gannon did, just earlier. Gannon started it when he was, like, 33, and Keenum's doing it now at, like, 28 or 29.
Yeah.
His numbers aren't as good as Gannon's, but his record is better than Gannon's was. So it's really, really just, like, surreal's not the right word. It's, like, eerie that they're doing that. And his college numbers were insane. So.
His college numbers are just absolutely ridiculous. There's a year where he threw, like, 58 touchdowns to 6 interceptions.
Yeah.
He almost put up, like, 6,000 yards.
I just don't... And he was undrafted, too. I think... Yeah. You'd think with numbers like that, you'd at least get, like, a 6th or 7th round pick.
Yeah.
So...
Even, like... Remember Colt Brennan?
Yeah.
From Hawaii?
He got a 7th round pick, yeah.
And he like... All right. I might say this because I was actually, believe it or not, I was actually thinking of writing an article on Colt Brennan. Because he had just the most interesting
career.
He was killing it at Hawaii. got drafted by the Redskins, was killing it in training camp with the Redskins.
And then it's like didn't...
And then he just never got a shot and flamed out.
He was... Yeah, I'm gonna... Let's pull him up. Hawaii statistics. Here we go. Colt Brennan. 2005 Hawaii. 4,000 yards, 35 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. 2005,
you say?
Ooh.
2005 college football season.
Very interesting. Well,
keep it posted.
We'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. 2006 for Hawaii. 5,549 yards, 58 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. 2007, 4,343, 38 touchdowns. So he threw 17 interceptions. So, but considering the fact that at Hawaii, they like only threw the ball. So,
yeah,
let's... In 2008, when he was a rookie, he led all rookies in touchdown passes, passing yards, and quarterback rating for the preseason.
And yeah, I like watched a video of him, his preseason debut against the Jets. He's like dropping dimes, like 30 yards downfield, like fitting the ball in like this tiny window, like right in the receiver's hands. And the announcer, I don't know who it was, it might have been Dan Dierdorf, is like, this kid is just like picking his spots. Like, this is incredible. I've never seen anything like this.
Okay, so
and then he
says,
just never played in the regular season.
It says, yeah, he was basically like their backup third string guy for his rookie season. But then in 2009, he was placed on injured reserve because he tore his hamstring and hurt his hip. And it was the same hip that he had to have surgery on at Hawaii.
Yeah.
So that might have been why. Then he went to be the backup for the Raiders. Then he played in the UFL. He played in the CFL for a little while. He played in the Arena Football League.
Just going down the ladder.
But then he got in a car crash, too, while he was in the Arena Football... when he was in the Arena Football League, it looks like. So, just a rough turn of events, but...
Yeah, an interesting... I find, like, stories like that...
He should have gotten a shot.
Yeah. I find stories like this, like, fascinating. It's just, like, a random guy... That it just like his career has like so many ups and downs, but he's just like a nobody in the long run.
Oh, he went to Colorado. I didn't know he went to Colorado.
Yeah,
Okay. Yeah, well, we don't need to talk about that. Yeah. Never mind. Well, we're focusing on the good things. Focus on the good things.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was that game. Vikings and Lions. Chargers at Cowboys.
Ooh. Wow. I'm not going to pick against the Chargers the way they're trending.
I'll pick the Chargers.
I'm not going to pick the Cowboys, rather. Even at home and even on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
The Cowboys look completely lost.
I'll pick the Chargers.
Yeah, so I'm going Chargers also.
Giants at Redskins.
Redskins.
I'll take the
I'll
take the Redskins. Giants, I'll take the Redskins. Bills at Chiefs. I'll take the Chiefs. I've picked against them every week, and... You notice that we didn't elaborate on the Peterman thing because we don't need to.
Yeah.
So we'll pick the Chiefs.
I just got reminded. The reason I want to sound there is because I just got reminded that we play the Chiefs this week.
Oh, it's the only thing I've been thinking. Yeah. I thought about when we were playing the Chargers. It was the only thing I was thinking about.
I was like, "Fuck!" I thought we played the Colts this week, and I was like, "All right, good rebound. No, like, we can face the tough stretch.
No,
maybe at 6-5.
No.
Yeah, I'm taking the Chiefs.
Yeah. Depending on what happens in that game, we might have. We're either going to have next episode, depending on what happens against the Chiefs, the next episode, we're either going to have a long rant or we'll have a good discussion. You're going to get one of the two. So
the Chiefs did lose to the Giants.
Be ready.
Which means they're either on a cold streak or they're going to be pissed as hell and beat the crap out of
Bills. We'd probably lose to the Giants right now, too.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Titans at Colts.
Titans.
Browns at Bengals. Bengals,
yeah.
Buccaneers at Falcons.
I'll go with the Falcons. They played well tonight.
I'll go with the Falcons too, even though Fitzy is doing good things for the Buccaneers. Dolphins at Patriots.
Patriots.
Bears at Eagles.
Eagles,
but the Bears are playing really well.
Yeah.
Trubisky had a very good game.
Eagles, but I hope Jordan Howard puts up 200 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Eagles, and I hope Jake Elliott comes back from his concussion.
Yeah.
Because he's my soulmate.
Oh, both of our kickers have gotten hurt this year.
That's right.
My favorite kicker is Dan Bailey, because I've had him on my fantasy team like 3 years in a row.
Dirty Dan.
You know why Jake's favorite kicker is Jake Elliott.
Because that
and now they're both hurt.
Yeah. Jake Elliott is my favorite kicker because it's my name.
Yep.
Panthers at Jets.
Panthers.
I'll take the Panthers, yeah. Seahawks at 49ers.
Seahawks.
Saints at Rams.
Ooh.
I'm going to take the Saints.
I'm going to take the Saints, too. I'm a bigger believer in Drew Brees and Mark Ingram than I am Jared Goff and Todd Gurley.
If the Rams had beaten the Vikings, I'd pick the Rams, but they just didn't look very good against the Vikings. So the
Saints are rolling.
The Saints are really good, yeah. Jaguars at Cardinals.
Jaguars.
I'll take the Jaguars, but I hope Blaine Gabbert lights it up.
Blaine Gabbert had a good week this week. Yeah. I was happy to see that.
I just think the Jaguars are definitely going to win, considering not because of Blaine Gabbert, but because Bruce Arians literally was like, yeah, every team Blaine Gabbert's been on has been shitty.
Yeah.
Like his words. And the just, there's, I don't know how many players on the Jaguars team were on the Jaguars when Gabbert was there, but they probably are going to take offense to that. Yeah. So,
I always,
even though it's not wrong.
I always pull for like the hard luck journeyman court, like the Josh McCowns and Blaine Gabberts and the
big time
Case Keenums and the Fitzpatricks.
Big time. Broncos at Raiders.
Raiders.
Took the Raiders. Packers at Steelers.
Steelers.
Steelers. And then that was Sunday night, Packers at Steelers. Monday night, Texans at Ravens.
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 The Texans might not score. The Ravens have had three shutouts already this year.
And they're lucky because Joe Flacco is just like so awful. Up and down right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the picks. Like Rob was saying, 2005, so do you want to kind of give an overview of a project we're going to be undergoing? It's not going to be ready for a little while, but something
for
that,
probably,
that we're currently in the beginning stages of?
Yeah, so we were thinking something that me and my good friend Joe Thielman have always talked about is reminiscing about the 2005 college football season, and that's the year where USC played Texas in the championship game.
Like one of the greatest games of all time.
Yeah, it was just a legendary game, but it was a super interesting year in football too because there was like a bunch of legendary games. Because it was the first year that teams figured out that in order to move up in the BCS standings, they had to schedule good teams at the start of the year. So you had a bunch of marquee matchups earlier in the year, and then there's drama at the end of the year with rankings. And then it all culminated in, like, this epic championship season or championship game. So, and there's a lot of, like, off-the-field storylines and stuff, too. So Jake and I were thinking of making, like, a homemade documentary week by week. We haven't decided if we want to release one, like...
giant one?
One, like, 2 or 3 hour long documentary, or if we want to make episodic week by week. Like, this is what happened in week one, this is what happened in week two, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, we have a lot of work to do, but it's something that we're both interested in.
Yeah, we have the skeleton outline right now.
Yeah.
Things that we want to look at. We're going to look at, there was like 18 teams that changed conferences. There were like 4 or 5 big name coaches that like we associate with certain schools that just had arrived at those schools like all at the same time. Like Rob said, like scheduling these big time teams are like, hey, we should play another big time team. Like,
yeah.
Why don't we do that more often? And some of those teams just had like, you know, crazy names of guys that were great in college, and so a lot of them were so great in the NFL, at least nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you wouldn't have known then they were gonna be good in the NFL, but we can be like, yeah, like look at who was in college this time.
Yeah.
And you'll just be like, you're gonna be like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So
yeah, my vision at least is to kind of like supplant the viewer into like the 2005 season.
Yeah.
And then kind of like, so that there's like 20 teams that were like that were very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to just like boil it down to
USC,
Texas.
We'll give like a quick blurb at least on like all those teams, and then slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Then the last like 30 minutes of the whole documentary probably will just be completely focused, keyed in on that one game.
That Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
It was such a good game.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got to watch it when you were a kid.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. It was like one of the first games that
my dad
let me stay up to watch.
It's the first, like, aside from like Oklahoma games, it's the only other game that I can like, I don't remember the game itself, but I remember the ending.
Yeah.
I remember seeing
that game. I definitely remember the ending, but I remember a lot of the game too, because I was so...
I also don't really like remember like processing like what I was seeing.
Yeah. I didn't understand that I was watching like the greatest college football team ever lose. Yeah.
Of course I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Yeah. I was so into it because I hated that USC team.
Yeah. Well,
for obvious reasons.
And it was interesting for us because, for at least my family, because we hated USC because they beat Oklahoma in the national championship 2 years in a row. But like, we really don't like Texas either.
Yeah.
But of course we're rooting for the Big 12, and yeah, we're absolutely rooting for the Big 12 to beat USC. Yeah. So it was fun. I remember that.
Yeah. So that's something we're going to look forward to. We don't have an ETA. It's probably going to be a long time.
Yeah, but
we're very amateur on video editing.
Yeah, but we have learned how to do audio editing.
Yeah.
Through trial and error through this, and we've gotten at least to a point where we can comfortably do that. So bear with us on that.
First couple episodes might be rough, but I'm sure by the end.
Bear with us, because
it will be
by the end. It'll be great. We're very excited about it. We're not going to put something together that we're not happy with or proud of or subpar. So yeah, if anybody has any thoughts or ideas or anything they specifically would like dying to see in it, definitely reach out to us. But I hope you guys are excited about it.
Or if you have a preference on one big documentary or episodic.
Yeah.
Let us know. Any feedback is appreciated.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's our episode. We'll see you guys after Thanksgiving. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody.